Hi, today is November 10th, 2019. This is Mobile Views Podcast 307. I'm Todd Agassa-Ward, my good friend John Westfall. And once again, we've got a hodgepodge of topics to talk about.
A little bit of everything, but some interesting changes in the last 2 weeks since we last spoke. You know, regarding a few big players and some new tech. So I think we have some stuff to talk about.
Okay. So Google bought Fitbit.
Yeah, that's not surprising. You know, if you can't beat them, join them. And obviously in the wearable market, Fitbit is number two right now, or number one, depending on how you chunk it up between Apple and Fitbit. Fitbit has a very compelling product line that I think makes it a very good competitor to Apple with the Apple Watch. And so I think this was a very logical move by Google's part. And I'm glad that Google has basically said we're still going to be cross-platform.
I'm kind of sad that Fitbit's going to die, though. You know?
Well, you had put that you worry about Fitbit going to join the big evil Google. So what do you worry about the most with?
Well, the fact that Google is terrible at keeping hardware vendors alive, you know? I mean, look at Nest. That's a disaster. And then Motorola, which they sold to Lenovo, and I don't know. There's probably a bunch of other pieces of hardware. Well, my Android Wear watch, you know, which didn't get update after, I don't know, 1 year or a year and a half or something like that. They just have a very disappointing track record of dealing with hardware companies. And, you know, I think I've got about 10 years of data in Fitbit right now. I just hope that Google is good at one thing, though, and that is letting you keep your data. So I'm at least hoping that they'll give us the opportunity to download our Fitbit data before they kill Fitbit sometime.
Well, and that was something I thought might be a good thing because Google does have the unified Google Checkout interface or whatever they call it. I think it's Checkout, where you can basically download your data from any Google property. Prior to this, you had to have a premium subscription to Fitbit in order to download your data. So I'm glad to see that hopefully that will open up where anyone can download their data. But, I don't know. It's sort of disturbing when Google buys something.
Yeah.
Because you're never quite sure what their goal is. You know, I think about there was the I don't know if you remember it, what used to be I don't even remember what the name of it was. It was this little dongle that you could use to do wireless payments, and then Samsung bought it and called it Samsung Pay. But it was – I had it. It was originally a Kickstarter, and it actually emitted – no, Coin was another one that I wish it had survived, but it didn't. And then Plastic was another one that was supposed to be like Coin. This was like a little thing where you put it up to a credit card reader, and you hit a button, and it emitted the magnetic signal to the reader. So it was a way around contactless not being around. That was a cool product. And then Samsung bought it, renamed it Samsung Pay, and I think it's now dead. I think it was built into some Samsung phones. And then, you know, it's sort of when you see a hardware vendor buy another hardware vendor, you worry about what their plan is for that hardware.
Right. Oh, and we've got something
but I don't
else
see
to talk about right after
what?
This.
Our
next topic, actually.
But
getting back to Fitbit, at any rate, and oddly enough, I am currently wearing an Apple Watch on my left wrist and a Fitbit Inspire HR on my right wrist. So, you know, I am a supporter of both the number one and number two vendors of wearable devices.
Well, and I don't see it making any good sense for Google, I'm sorry, to discontinue the Fitbit devices. I see them maybe wanting to convert them over to Android.
Yeah.
Versus the Fitbit operating system. But I don't think that would necessarily be a bad thing. What Google might be able to get out of this is people actually doing Android Wear, but they're not aware of it because they're buying they're buying their new Fitbit, and they've had Fitbit forever. If they make it work with the existing Fitbit ecosystem, I think that could be a really cool change. But
And you know, I have to say that given my number one use of a smartwatch is notifications, the Fitbit Inspire HR would be a pretty good device if only the notifications lasted long enough for me to read it.
You want to be able to read your notifications?
Well, that's so crazy. I'm fussy like that. It's one of my quirks. Yeah. So anyway, big fan of Fitbit. This is my fourth Fitbit. Original Fitbit, Fitbit Ultra, Fitbit One. All were pocketable clip-on devices. And then I got then, you know, actually the Fitbit One still works. It's just in terms of functions, but the display works.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't do things like do a soft reset if needed or just look at it. So anyway, so I bought the Fitbit HR. I kind of like it. I was going to wear it in my pocket, but actually it's kind of nice having both wrists buzz when I get a phone call.
Well, now you can do that very Wonder Woman-inspired move. You know, you've got something on both wrists.
There you go. And you know what I should have done? I didn't, but I probably should have paired my Fitbit with my Android phone, with my Pixel 3a instead of my iPhone. Because then I'd get the phone call info from both phones, but it's okay. I can still do that if I want, I guess.
Yeah, you can always move it.
Yeah. Okay, now speaking of hardware companies buying hardware companies, this one shocked me. CNBC reports that Xerox has made a cash and stock offer for HP. This is the hardware side, and HP is now two companies, HP and HPE, which is their services side, where one of our friends work, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Xerox is this tiny, tiny company. You know, I don't understand this kind of leveraged buyout kind of thing. I guess it's like when Charter Cable bought Time Warner Cable. Maybe that's the closest thing I can think of.
It's definitely an interesting move. I mean, let's be serious. Xerox and HP could be something together that they could never be separate. Yeah. So, you know, that space kind of is saturated. You've got Brother in that space, which is still making pretty good bargain devices.
Yeah.
And you've got Lexmark, which moved from bargain to more premium devices over the last number of years. Toshiba, Xerox, and HP. Toshiba's one of the larger players in that market. So I would think that Xerox and HP together could be a very good force in office printing and office, hardware.
Do you think they'll continue to manufacture computers? I mean, I would think so.
See, yeah, that's what I think might go by the wayside. I don't see HP sticking in that business if Xerox buys them.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, I don't know how.
Yeah, so HP, I have to admit, I have not bought an HP computer in a long, 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 long time. And I used to buy a lot of them. I mean, I bought several of their handheld PCs. I think I had three or four of them, starting with HP 320LX and a couple of their Jornadas, a couple of their pocket PCs, and I think I bought a desktop. Don't think I ever owned a notebook. I also had HP UX workstation at work many, many years ago. But I haven't bought one in a while. It's funny, too, because I was just thinking about buying an HP Envy. Since none of my current flock or stock of Windows PCs at home works worth a darn, because, you know, Windows just gets all credit up and I'm too lazy to reformat.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's too bad. I was just thinking about buying HP Envy 2-in-1. That's okay. Yeah, so the irony, by the way, is that, you know, I think we can honestly credit Xerox with creating the first multi-window graphical UI in the Xerox Star.
Yeah.
You know, which Steve Jobs saw and emulated somewhat in the first Mac. Although the Mac had overlapping windows, and I don't think the Xerox Star had over. I think it had tiled windows, like Windows 3.0.
If I remember right, famously, Steve Jobs thought it had overlapping windows.
Right.
And told his engineers, make overlapping windows, they did.
Yeah.
And then the Star did not actually have overlapping windows. Yeah. So
it's a good thing that perception is not always 100% accurate.
Yeah, very true. The other one isn't like this. Just make it like this.
Yeah. But it'd be interesting, you know, if they come full circle and start selling devices with graphical windows. They could call it the Xerox Star. You know, it'd be kind of cool, actually.
Star Reborn.
A store is reborn. How's that?
When they start marketing that, they'll have to go back and pay us royalties.
That's right.
If we, you know, trademark that phrase.
We said it first. Okay, so at any rate, again, and this is different from HPE, which is HP's software their enterprise, not software, but enterprise services company. Okay, now. Oh, yeah, this is actually interesting. Did you add this one, John, the Unified Office app for iOS and Android?
Yeah, I did. We're the only ones that have access to our show notes. So if I didn't and you did, that's more concerning that you don't remember that again.
You know, I'm getting older, and sometimes my memory goes,
Yeah, so Microsoft announced this week that they are unifying the big three, PowerPoint, Word, and Excel, into one app for iOS and Android, which, first of all, this amused me a lot because if you remember the first Office portable Office suites on Pocket PC, they used to be just one app.
Yes.
You know, you download something that could open all three of those and maybe edit it and maybe do this and that. From a perspective of someone who has all three Office apps on their phone and uses them all quite regularly, for me, it's six of one, half dozen of another, because they're all sitting in their own folder on my phone. I don't really see the icons ever. I just kind of, use Spotlight on my phone to pull up whichever one I need.
Yeah.
I assume the URL schemes are going to stay the same, so any of my shortcuts I call Excel or Word or all that will still work. But it is an interesting change, and definitely more in line with their integrated approach to Office, sort of taking a page out of the Google Drive spreadsheet, where you just take everything and have all these links kind of together.
Yeah,
so I'm not sure.
Have you tried it, John?
I haven't tried it. I didn't get into the preview, nor did I try to get into the preview, because it's test flight only limits you to 10,000 people, and apparently they went through all their test flight invitations in a day. But you can download the preview for Android.
And in fact, I did.
I don't have a modern Android device to do. So what are your thoughts on it?
Well, first let me tell you what it – because I was a little surprised. So it includes Word, Excel, PowerPoint. You kind of expect that. It's got a PDF tool of some kind. Let me see what happens. It says no files found. Let's see. Hang on. And something called Media. I'm not sure what that is. And something called Notes. And honestly, it's not OneNote, but it says no notes found. So that said, it does see all of my OneDrive, Excel, Word, and PowerPoint files. So, it also touches into OneDrive, although it doesn't say it by name. So I thought that was kind of interesting. It can do things that convert. You can sign a PDF. I guess that's what the PDF thing is for. So you can sign a PDF. You can scan pictures into a PDF. You can scan a QR code. You can do text to image and image to table conversion. You might recall that was added to Excel for Android when I discussed it a few months ago, I think. So that's kind of neat, where you take a picture of a table, like on a in a book or newspaper or something. And I even tried it with a handwritten one, and it'll convert it to Excel spreadsheet, which is pretty darn neat. And you can transfer files, I presume via Bluetooth. It says share nearby, transfer files. What's missing is Outlook and OneNote.
Yeah, that's still its own app. I think Outlook might stay its own app, but OneNote, geez, I wish they'd figure out what they want to do with OneNote. Because they destroyed the original OneNote, and now it just seems like Microsoft is still trying to figure out what to do with it. And they keep teasing that they're refreshing it in a major way. I saw some stuff this week on that, so hopefully OneNote will become a normal thing again soon.
And I don't know what this Notes app is, because there's not – so in the Notes – well, Notes module, I guess. In the Notes module, you can't create anything. And it says no notes found, so I'm not sure what it's looking for. I do have OneNote synced to my OneDrive, I think. So I'll try it again. I'll fire up OneNote, and create something specific that I can remember and bring it back in. Here's what I'm looking forward to, though. So – This unified Office app for Android only works on my Pixel phone. It does not work in the Android compatibility mode, or whatever you want to call it, on my Chromebook. And I would actually really like to see it on my Chromebook for the following reason. So I bought a Chromebook specifically for work. It's all I use it for. It stays in Office and never comes home. And I've been using the Android Microsoft Office apps for Android on it. And what I think is happening is when you run an Android app on a Chromebook, I think it runs it in a container. Because as far as I can tell, we have MFA, right? So I have to do multi-factor authentication for every app I launch. Whereas
That's annoying as all get out.
Yeah, so I think on Office when I do that, once I log into one, on an iPad, once I log into one Office 365 app, whether it's personal, home, or enterprise, I think it logs me into everything else.
It does in some cases, and I think it also helps remember the device for MFA, Microsoft's MFA.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I haven't noticed that because we just recently turned on MFA for some users, and I'm one of them. And I've noticed that I haven't had to relog in. I did have to relog in between the Office apps and Outlook.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was Outlook and OneNote, or not OneNote, but OneDrive. So a little bit of relogging in, but not too horribly.
Yeah.
Bad.
In any case, I have to say it's kind of nice to have all the apps in one place. I kind of like it. I mean, I can't say I was heavily using Office, you know, mobile device applications until recently when I took my Chromebook to work and started using the Android version. But the whole, you know, MFA for every single time was just driving me batty. So, I mean, and I know you can check that box to leave it authenticated for a while, but it was still kind of disconcerting. So I've been using mostly the web version where, you know, once I do an MFA authentication for the web browser, it knows that it's authenticated for a certain number of days. And I can move between Excel and Word and so forth. And even OneNote, you know, for web, which is weak as all get out, but at least it's there. So I'm hoping to see more from this. I'm also hoping to see some kind of a, I don't know, calendar or, you know, some other Outlook type integration with it, or tasks, or you know, one of those, or planner, one of those kind of things.
Yeah. Well, we will see. I also noticed this week in other Office news that the base tier of Office 365 Academic now includes Microsoft Whiteboard, which was at a higher tier, and now it looks like it's been released to a smaller tier. So I thought that was very interesting. If anyone, you know, have ever played with that, it's a multi-collaborative whiteboard app. Which you can use in a classroom, or you can just, everyone can open it and scribble on the same whiteboard. So
yeah, have you?
That is something I haven't used it in a class, but I have played around with it a little bit.
Okay, I played around with it a long time, well, like maybe two years ago when it first came out, but then I haven't used it again. I got to revisit it, at least on the, I guess it won't work on my Android device, but I still have a Windows 10 notebook at work, so I guess I could use it that for I've been trying to push collaborative work amongst our group, amongst our folks in our group. So we'll see how that turns out.
Trying to get people to like each other.
No, they don't have to like each other. They just got to work with each other. Okay, you. Okay, was this announcement in the last 2 weeks? I don't even remember.
It was a couple weeks back, and okay. I think I said that I ordered them, but I did get them. Apple's AirPods Pro.
Yeah.
So I had the first generation, first day released Apple AirPods.
Okay.
So that's what I'm going from.
Okay.
And it is, so I've had, this is a weird thing. I had no real complaints about my AirPods.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that there was, you know, I was going to be so surprised. But I was very surprised by the AirPods Pro. Couple of things. First, that faster connection time with the Apple H1 chip versus the W1. It's maybe about a second and a half to 2 seconds faster of a connection, and it's much more reliably connected.
So my when you say connection, you mean the time that between the time you take out the AirPod from its case and the time it says I'm on the iPhone or iPad or whatever you're using? Or is that something
else?
Yeah,
so I'm talking about the time from the time you put it in your ear to the time it connects.
Okay.
Because it turns on as soon as it hits your ear.
Okay.
Or it detects that it's in your ear. And I know that my original AirPods had gotten a little dirty, and that's one reason why they don't connect as fast. But there were some times where I was waiting 10, 20, 30 seconds for it to notice that it was in my ear.
Sorry, you know, I don't have AirPods, so I don't know that. What does it mean AirPods got? I mean, like, physically dirty, like dirt?
Yeah, they physically get dirt and other debris from your ear in there, and there's all these tips and tricks to try to blow them out or clear them out and all that. And so I've had that with my originals because, you know, 3 years of use and earwax and other random debris and other stuff that gets in there. So, but these, you put them in, and usually by the time my arm is back down at my side, they're already connected.
Yeah.
So that's a fairly quick, much quicker than I was used to.
That's nice.
They have three modes of operation. They have the noise cancellation mode, and then they have off mode, and then they have the transparency mode.
Okay.
So what transparency really does is it just turns on the microphones in your AirPods and feeds some of that through to the to your ear. So you're basically hearing the world around you as well as whatever's going on. And that kind of blew me away. That was just a really cool feeling. And the best I can describe that is if you're in a room and, you know, you have a radio on in the background and you're listening to that, that's sort of what it's like. Your music is playing below the bed of everything else that's going on in the room. So you can still talk with people. You can still have a conversation and hear what they're saying and reply. And you sound more normal because you're hearing yourself not just through bone conduction, but also voice coming out as usual. So you don't have that isolated feeling like you're usually getting with headphones that are in-ear headphones or over-the-ear headphones.
Now, can you increase the volume in the transparent one? And I mean, not the volume of the content you're playing, but the volume of the outside stuff. I was wondering if it could be used as a hearing aid.
You know, there's a way to do that through Apple's, through the accessibility settings in your iPhone. You can actually turn on something called Live Listen.
Uh-huh.
And that feature has been around forever with Bluetooth headphones. But what it does is it turns the microphone on your iPhone into a remote microphone.
Ah.
So if you want to be really James Bondish, you can use this to spy on people. You can leave your iPhone in a space where they're going to be and hear what they're saying. But yeah, you can sort of get poor man's headphone or hearing aids off of that. But you can't really... With the transparency mode, you can't adjust the mix in terms of more of the outside world, less of, you can just put your music up louder.
Right.
And if you put your music up at full blast, you will lose all the benefits of transparency mode. You know, you'll, you'll still just hear your music. But that's really cool to swap between, because if you hold the stem on the AirPod Pro, you swap between the noise cancellation mode and the transparency mode. And I went to, I was picking up lunch one day at a pizza place. And I went in and I had my AirPods in and I put them on transparency mode. And then the guy told me, you know, it's going to be about 10 minutes or whatever. So I thought, okay, I'll go stand in the corner. And I put on noise cancellation mode.
Right.
And as soon as I did, I thought, wow, that's interesting. Their blower motor back there just turned off at the very moment that I put the, I thought maybe it didn't. I turned off transparency mode or went back to, you know, swap between them. And sure enough, it was still there. That, you know, blower was still on, but noise cancellation had taken it almost completely out of the mix to the point that it sounded like they had turned it off. Huh. So I thought that's pretty cool that it's that good in a sense.
Yeah.
And finally, even though these are in-ear, they don't bother my ears. My ears tend to pick up a little bit more earwax than most, and my ear canals are actually a little smaller than most people's. So I was a little bit concerned because the last pair of in-ear headphones that I had were not very comfortable, and I ended up giving them away to someone because I just they didn't work for me. So I was kind of concerned about that with the new shape, but I've had no problems with
it. And if you don't mind me getting personal, I understand it comes with three different size ear tips. Which one did work best for you?
So the ones that came on it by default are the medium size.
Yeah.
And I did the little test that they have to see if they had a seal, and they both gave me a good seal. So I did not actually try the other two sizes yet. They're still in the packaging here. So I'm just happy with the medium size tip. And it provides a nice little seal. And, of course, you know, you buy AirPods, you get the standard Apple packaging. Any stickers this time? No stickers. I wish they used to give out stickers. Now they're just not anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. What's
kind of sad.
Yeah.
But the case is a little bit bigger. So the Air Snap that I bought from 12 South no longer fits my AirPods case. I'm sure 12 South will probably get a new version at some point.
We just talked about that in the last podcast, right?
I know. And then AirPods come out the next week. But
sorry, don't mean to
mock
you. I've
been happy with them. And I'm happier with them than I thought I was going to be with them. I thought they were going to be a little bit of an upgrade, but apparently you go 3 years in. And the real test that I thought was kind of cool is my wife really liked them too. And she is not a technology fan usually. I have to kind of push her upgrades and things like that, but they actually she enjoyed the sound out of them and thought they were pretty cool. So you never know, she might end up getting a pair for Christmas or something like that. Just nice. be able to finally jump into Bluetooth audio.
Nice. I think you answered all the questions I had for you when I saw that you had bought one. Transparent mode and that faster connection you were talking about, and how good is noise cancellation, all those kind of questions, and whether or not they fit okay for you. You know, I do want to point out, though, that I thought I saw some reviewers say this is Apple's first in-ear headset. But, you know, many, 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 many years ago, I remember Apple had a wired silicon tip headset. I think it was called the in-ear earbuds, or whatever they called it, whatever the Apple earbuds are called. And they worked pretty good. I really liked mine. Although I had to take it apart. I had to take it apart to clean the contacts because one ear stopped working. It was like the only Apple thing that it was ever designed to be fixed by a human being, I think. Because you could actually unscrew the ear tip and clean the contacts and screw it back on. It worked fine.
You know, speaking of unscrewing and basically fixing something. So yeah. My wife has a Fitbit that's a couple models up from yours.
Right.
And recently we noticed that there had been a lot of buildup because she had worn it in the shower and there had been soap buildup that had gotten into where you hit the button to change the bands.
Right.
So I ended up finding, I think it's like a Torx 2 screwdriver and taking the little ends off of it. And I was pleasantly surprised that as long as you don't lose the extremely small spring,
right,
you can actually take the ends of those apart and clean out any gunk or anything that's in there and then screw them back together and have everything. So
yeah.
That was an unexpected surprise of something that I didn't think would be as serviceable as it was. And now in the end, you do have to have a Torx 2 screwdriver, which unless you have a kit for laptop computer repair, you probably don't have one of those lying around. But
right. It
was unexpectedly serviceable.
Nice. Nice. I think that's the only question I had for you. It's or not only questions I had for you. And you answered them all without me asking, so that was awesome.
I've just read your mind by this point.
Yeah, you just know me too well, man.
It's interesting to me having now the Beats that I'm using right now to record this, plus the original AirPods, plus the AirPods Pro. You can see that Apple has really kind of continually up their game because these that I'm using are about a year older than the AirPods. The AirPods came out in late 2016, and the AirPods Pro obviously just came out. But it's nice to finally have Bluetooth headphones that I don't feel like I have to replace all the time.
Yeah.
Because prior to buying the Beats Solo 2s, I had been looking for a good pair of Bluetooth headphones for quite a number of years that I actually liked and worked reliably, which was hard to get both of those things.
Yeah, well, you know, I have never paid... Let's see, what's the most I've ever paid for a Bluetooth headset? Thinking now. Maybe $45? So, you know, my expectations are set lower than they would be for a $250... I think it's... What is it, $250? $250 pair of headsets. So I've never paid I've never paid $250 for... Well, it's sort of like my Apple Watch. You know, I've never paid more than probably $100 and some odd for a watch before I got my Apple Watch. So it is by far the most expensive watch I've ever owned.
Now, I hate to bring up bad memories, but your Suntu Spot Watch.
Yeah.
I thought that was in the $100 to $200 range.
I think it was about $100, although I feel like it's less. Here's the deal. I remember when we were MVPs, you know, we were privy to all kinds of news because of our friends, right? They would tell us, hey, you know, we just saw this and all that. I think Steve Hughes contacted us and, you know, like over our like email chat or something and said, hey, if you want a free Suntu, you know, to replace your current one, just email this place. And I got my second Suntu, the N3i, for free. So I feel like I only paid half price.
Yeah, because I had the Fossil.
Yeah.
Spot watch, and I think the whole reason I went for the Fossil was because I was a poor grad student at the time, and I think the Suntus were too expensive, so they might have been over $100.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah, that's probably the most expensive watch I've ever owned. But like I said, we got some discounts and all kinds of stuff, so I feel like, or maybe did I use my MVP bucks for it? Was it available via MVP bucks back then? Because it was a long time ago.
It might have been.
Yeah. Anyway, I got a deal, so I feel very
happy.
You
knew a guy.
I knew a guy. I knew Steve.
Steve is a good guy to know.
Yeah. So, you know, that was that thing. And then I was like, eh, well, anyway, I'm still thinking about it. I think my wife's going to replace. She has a first-gen AirPod also. And I said, you know, the new one's really kind of cool. You know, I will say one thing that I would really, really, really pay money for. And it'd be a combination of a phone and some kind of a, you know, wearable device. Is I would pay lots of money for a throat mic that does. And we've discussed this. That takes subvocal commands to our phone. That would be worth money.
It'd be the only way that I'd feel comfortable talking to my phone. Now, it is kind of nice to be able to invoke SIRI by just talking and just giving a command to my new head, my new AirPods, versus having to say, hey, SIRI, do something.
Well, you know, I think, you know, I don't know if my 3A does it. My 2A did it. Let me see. Oh, it does work. Weather. Yeah, well. It's heard the first thing first. So on a Pixel 3, a Pixel 2 and a Pixel 3A, you can just squeeze the side of the sides, I should say, of your phone, and it'll activate Google Assistant without saying anything.
Yeah.
But I was talking while I was squeezing, and I thought I was asking, you know, where is it? And I got real confused.
The by the way, the Suntu N3, when it originally came out, was $299.
And I know I didn't pay that much. I would have never paid that much. Oh, wait.
The Fossil was $199.
Yeah. And you might ask, well, what about my Moto 360? Right? Because that was like, I think, $199 at the time. I think it went on sale for $139, and I used my Amazon points to buy it, so I didn't pay anything.
Yep. So, very smart.
Yeah. Okay. Next thing, kind of hardware, kind of sad story, but not too sad, is my 500 gigabyte external hard drive, which I used to back up my 2008 iMac, died recently. And I wasn't too sad because I think it's like 8 years old. I think it's the second external drive I've used with that iMac. Again, it's a, you know, I bought it in January 2008, which means really it's a 2007 model. But at any rate, it's only got 250 gigabytes of hard drive, so the 500 gigabyte external HD was just fine for backing it up. I think that, you know, although it got rid of some of the older ones as I kept backing up the iMac, it still had backups going back probably to 2011 or so, which was kind of amazing. But at any rate, it died, and it was actually a FireWire connector. So, you know, I can't test anything else. None of my other Macs have FireWire on it anymore. You know, so I can't tell if my FireWire port is dead or if them. At any rate, so I went to Costco and I bought a 5 terabyte. Yeah, I think it's 5 terabyte external drive for, I don't know, $89 or something crazy like that. And so I spent, I don't know, probably 6 hours overnight backing up my iMac. So my iMac is backed up again. And I got to say, you know, these Macs last forever. I'm talking to you right now on a 2013 MacBook Air, which works just fine. And my 2008 iMac works just fine. I feel like I got my Apple's money's worth on this one.
Well, I'm using a 2015 connected to a monitor I bought in 2011. So, I will say Apple hardware tends to last a while. That was why I'm still kind of shocked that my 2010 Mac Mini died in 2017.
I remember that.
I thought I was going to be able to keep that around. I still have it in my museum of Apple junk.
Yeah, me too. I've got a Mac Mini, the original Mac Mini, somewhere.
Yeah.
When did that come out? 2006? Something like that. But at any rate, okay, another hardware story. So, you know, I think I mentioned several times that I bought a Lenovo Chromebook C330 to use exclusively in my office. I think, in fact, I mentioned it here when talking about the Office for Android app. And, you know, it's great, but I found out something really surprised me. So one of the reasons I bought it is because, you know, versus using an iPad or Surface Pro, which is terrible, but is I thought I could take notes with it on my lap because usually I have a desk to use it on, but every now and then I go to a meeting that's kind of crowded and I got to sit in a chair with no tabletop and take notes. Well, you can't. I think it's because I paid $250 for it. This is not a high-end device. I think the plastic is flexible enough that when I'm sitting with it on my lap and I'm typing, it's bending a little and it causes the trackpad, even though I'm not touching the trackpad, to just randomly jump in my text. And it's like moving my cursor around. I put it back on a tabletop and it works fine. So it's not like it's broken. You know, it's not like the trackpad is broken or the OS is munged up or something. It's just, I think it's just too flexible because it's all plastic. Yeah. So something to consider for folks looking at the various low-end Chromebooks that are coming out, or that are out, I should say coming out, because a lot of the older models, like the C330 was released, I think, a year ago, maybe a little more than a year ago. So, you know, there are new models. I think there's a C340 that's out now. I can't find it on Amazon, so I bought the C330. I didn't want to pay more than $300. I didn't want something bigger than 11 or 12 inches, and so this fit the bill. It's still really super useful, except that I can't use it on my lap. So, oh well. Let me rephrase it. I can't use it on my lap if you use the physical keyboard. However, it is a convertible device. I can flip it over, which deactivates the keyboard and trackpad, and use an on-screen keyboard to type. But I haven't really done that. Maybe next meeting I go to, I'll try that. But yeah, so that was a little disappointing. But again, you pay $250, you know, you kind of get what you pay for. Maybe after I feel less of a sting on my credit card, I'll go back and maybe buy another Chromebook that's a little higher end for my office. Mm-hmm. And I should note, I bought the Chromebook for my office because our officially sanctioned device is a Windows 10 device, which is fine, except I hate my Lenovo ThinkPad because of all kinds of user experience kind of problems with it. Not the hard, functionally, it's fine. And so I brought in a Chromebook, and since we're in Office 365, I don't have to be on the production Wi-Fi. I can be on a guest Wi-Fi, not touch the production system with my, you know, my foreign device, and still do my work for the vast majority of time. There are a few things I can't do off the internet, yep. But it's still 99% of the time it's fine for what I need to do, take notes, that sort of thing.
Yep.
Okay, the last thing I wanted to mention is that I couldn't find my... Oh, Google thinks I'm talking to it. I'm not talking to you. The last thing I want to mention is I couldn't find my old Qi wireless charger. I think it was an Energizer. And I really wanted to try it with something. Couldn't find it, so I bought a $14 Yotech. Yotech. Sorry, that's a smoke alarm. Something about when it gets breezy here, the smoke alarm goes off. And I can't remove the battery. I might have to break it.
I will verify that Todd's house is not burning down.
Yeah, we're not
burning down. I can't see behind him, and I do not see smoke.
Yeah,
so
we're fine.
He's not just dismissing a smoke alarm to save the podcast at his own expense.
That's right. That's right. But anyway, so I bought a Qi wireless charger. I'll hold it up so John can see it. So
yep.
It's not too big. I tested it with my iPhone XS, and it works just fine, surprisingly, with a case on. Because I remember earlier with the Energizer, I had a much thicker armored case on my, not Pixel. The Pixel 3a doesn't have wireless charging, by the way. It was either my Pixel 2 or my Nexus 6. Anyway, it had a really thick case, and it would not allow it to charge through the case. So I have what do I have here? I have a SpyGen case. I really like that brand, SpyGen.
Mm-hmm.
And it will charge just fine through it, so pretty happy with it. And I don't need to aim it, which I kind of had to do with the older Energizer system. Anyway.
Yeah, I've thought about buying a few more Qi chargers, because now that my AirPods can charge over Qi, and my phone can charge over Qi, and they have Anker has some stand-up chargers that angle your phone up, and I thought about getting those for my desks. So maybe at Christmas this year, if there's an Anker sale, I might buy a few just to have for myself at my desks at work and my desk at home. But I also recently have had a friend at work that I've done some favors for, and I think her office is selling as a fundraiser these little multi-charger cables, you know, the USB-A on one end and then micro USB plus lightning plus USB-C on the other end. And she's given me two of those now for the favors I've done her. So that's kind of taking care of my charging at the office. So maybe I don't need to buy some wireless chargers.
But. Right. And I'm trying it with my Apple Watch right now, but...
I don't believe the Apple Watch charges over regular Qi.
Yeah, it's something special. It detects something's on it because the light goes on. The Yotech, there's a little charging light that goes on. But the Apple Watch itself says, I don't know what you're doing.
It doesn't really like it.
Yeah. But as you can see, I'll show John. I know the rest of you can't. But so I'll put my phone on it. And can you see the little green glow? That's telling you that it's charging. So anyway,
actually, I kind of like that. That one has that raised lip around the edge, because that's one of the problems that my Anker flat charger doesn't have, a raised lip, and I think sometimes I have to really be careful how I put the phone on to make sure it makes connection. So I think that raised lip helps it a little bit make the connection.
Yeah, so I'm pretty happy with this $14 purchase. The only thing I haven't really done is an actual full charge test to see what kind of heat it generates. You know, you might recall I bought an Apple Watch charger that made my watch so hot that I basically just threw the charger away and, you know, ate the cost.
Yeah.
And complained on Amazon, gave it like a 0-star rating or whatever.
Yep.
Okay, well, that is that, John. We somehow managed to get through 43 minutes. You did drop off, so maybe it's a little less. But let's say 40 minutes of talking about stuff, even though we had no topic to talk about when we started.
Yep.
Alrighty, so we're kind of nearing the holiday season, so John is a lot busier than I am, so he'll probably be off and on and doing stuff, and we'll probably be mostly weekly, but not quite. All right, we'll talk to you next time.